I came home from Afghanistan with the paperwork that said I'd served honorably. I came home with something else, too. Something that didn't have paperwork. A thing that lived in my body in the months and years after. That made me wake up 3 and 4 times a night. That meant I couldn't be in certain kinds of rooms anymore. That had no name for the longest time. Because I was surrounded by people who weren't supposed to have it. Who were too strong for it. Who had trained hard enough and believed enough. And earned the uniform enough that what I was experiencing could not possibly be what I increasingly knew it was. I was sexually assaulted while serving in the United States Army. And for the 5 years after I filed my report, the institution I had given my body to tried, in ways both explicit and bureaucratic, to convince the world and me that what I remembered had not happened the way I remembered it. This is not an unusual story among women veterans. That is the sentence I have the hardest time saying without something in me going very still. Because every time I say it, I have to reckon with what it means that something this catastrophic could be that common. Military sexual trauma, the Department of Veterans Affairs term for sexual assault and sexual harassment that occurs during military service, affects an estimated 1 in 3 women who have served in the United States military. The statistic has been cited so many times in so many contexts that it has acquired the smooth surface of a number that everyone acknowledges and nobody is quite willing to look at directly. 1 in 3. In any other institution, 1 in 3 would constitute a crisis that no administrator or legislator could describe as manageable. In the military, it has been documented, discussed, legislated over, subject to multiple oversight hearings, and addressed with a series of policy reforms across more than 2 decades, and the number has not moved in any sustained and meaningful way. What happened to me happened during my second deployment. I had been in the Army for 4 years. I knew my unit. I knew the chain of command. I knew that there were channels for reporting, that there were procedures, that I had rights under the Uniform Code of Military Justice that were supposed to protect me from retaliation for making a report. I made the report anyway, believing, because I had been told to believe it, that the system would do what systems are supposed to do. What the system actually did was apply a particular kind of pressure that people who haven't experienced it from the inside find difficult to fully picture. Not one of the things that happened after I filed my report was dramatic. None of it produced a moment that would make a clean news story. It was instead a sustained, low-grade accumulation of signals in the way assignments were redistributed, in the nature of the evaluation language that appeared on my performance documents, in the conversations that stopped happening when I entered certain rooms, in the particular silences that followed certain questions that communicated, without anything that could be formally contested, that filing that report had made me a person the institution no longer fully recognized as its own. The diagnosis that arrived on my medical record during this period was not post-traumatic stress disorder. It was a personality disorder. The clinical implications of a personality disorder versus PTSD diagnosis are significant, and they were significant in my case in a specific and consequential way. A personality disorder diagnosis characterizes the condition as pre-existing, as part of the individual's fundamental psychological makeup, as something that predates military service, and is therefore not service-connected. A PTSD diagnosis, properly documented and connected to a specific in-service event, is service-connected. It establishes the VA's obligation to provide treatment and disability compensation for a condition caused by service. The difference between those two diagnoses in the VA benefit system is the difference between receiving care and receiving nothing. There is a documented pattern in the research literature and in the congressional testimony of advocates for women veterans. Military service members who report sexual assault show statistically elevated rates of personality disorder diagnoses in their medical records in the period following their reports. The data is difficult to establish with precision because military medical records are complex and because the causal relationship is contested by the institutions involved. But the pattern is consistent enough that advocates and researchers have named it specifically, and multiple members of Congress have introduced legislation addressing it. The Fairness for Veterans Act, in various forms, has been introduced repeatedly to require additional scrutiny of personality disorder discharges that follow within a certain time frame of a reported sexual trauma. The legislation has not passed. My VA claims process lasted 4 years from initial filing to the first usable determination. During those 4 years, I submitted my original report. I submitted the supplemental documentation my VS, my Veterans Service Organization representative, helped me gather. I submitted personal statements. I submitted the statements of two other people who had direct knowledge of what had happened. I received two denials. Each denial letter was several pages long and cited, in careful bureaucratic language, the determination that the evidence submitted did not establish service connection for the claimed conditions. What the denial letters did not address, what they were not required to address, was the specific evidence I had submitted about the personality disorder diagnosis and the timeline of its appearance in my record relative to my report. The denial letters operated as if those documents were not part of the record I had submitted. I do not know if this was deliberate or procedural. I know that it was the experience of receiving a letter that looked like a careful response to your case while functionally ignoring the most important thing in your case. The Board of Veterans' Appeals process took another 3 years. My case was reviewed by a board judge who, to her credit, noted in the written decision language that the timeline inconsistencies in my medical record warranted additional review. That additional review, a new medical examination, a new psychological evaluation, produced a different determination. Not the full determination I had sought. A partial one. A service connection for PTSD was established. The personality disorder notation remained on my record. What this means in practical terms is that I receive care for a condition the VA has now acknowledged, from a system that still has a notation in my file suggesting the person who received that care has a pre-existing personality disorder that the care is presumably treating. I tell you this not to describe something that is behind me in the clean, resolved way that stories are sometimes told as if they are behind the person telling them. I tell it because it is the reality of how this works for the women who go through it. Not as a single dramatic injustice that can be named and corrected, but as a bureaucratic accumulation that requires years of sustained effort, legal representation, and a psychological constitution capable of repeatedly engaging with an institution that has demonstrated, through its behavior if not its stated policies, that it would prefer the claim to go away. What I was is still what I am. I served. I was harmed in service. I reported it. I was harmed again by the report. I spent 9 years navigating a system that was supposed to exist for people like me, and I am one of the ones for whom it eventually, partially, worked. There are women for whom it did not, for whom the personality disorder discharge ended their military careers and their access to benefits and their ability to credibly claim what happened to them, for whom the system's response to their report was itself the end of the story. For whom the honoring of service was theoretical, something that applied to the service they gave, just not to the damage the service left behind. The name I was given for what was happening in my body, the one that appeared in my medical record before I had any diagnosis at all, in the months immediately after my report, was later removed from the record in a formal correction proceeding. It took 7 years. It was removed with a notation that reads, in the dry language of administrative correction, that the original notation had been made in error. In error was the system that processed my claim operating exactly as designed, or failing in ways its designers never intended. Because the answer to that question determines whether the fix is a reform or a rebuild.